my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 404 to be broadcast Wednesday, July 17th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. I am broadcasting today on a Tuesday, which is a work day for Franny, so she is not here to join me today. Not a big deal. But I won't be able to respond to your comments as easily as I usually do when Fran is here. The reason I'm on today, which is a good reason, is because over the past weekend, I was working on the last farm-to-fork fondo. Or maybe it wasn't. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. So I was driving back yesterday from Vermont, which made it impossible for me to be able to do the show and other various things. But anyway, Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can comment right down here below on Facebook Live, or you can... you can also comment on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk page, or my send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my YouTube channel, Bicycle Talk. Yes. Ron's rant of the week. Hard to believe I still have to have this conversation, but it's always out there and there's always people commenting on it. And we have so many different trails groups now that are out there that are posting on a pretty regular basis as far as their particular sections of trails go. We've got a group out of Bolton. We've got a group out of Columbia now. We've got a group, obviously, the North Trail, which is Steve Salkolowski's group. We've got a lot of people that are now reporting on their sections of the trails. And the same thing happens each time. And we hear about trail etiquette and the lack thereof. And that is really what we're talking about right now, the lack thereof. So I have a contributor and listener, Pete Salomon, who put some very, very basic information out there. Really basic, simple. Walk, run, write. Announce when passing. Use just half the trail. And then stop. If you have to stop, stop off the trail. Just because there's a bike trail out there, I understand that it is multi-use and you're not really designed for high, we're just not really designed for high-speed travel. You want to go fast on your bike or on your e-bike, get out on the road where vehicles belong because you're a vehicle, all right? And if you're going to go fast and you're going to go beyond pedestrian speed, you probably just don't belong there. And, you know, I hate to keep bringing this up, but I have to keep bringing it up because it comes up all the time. Trails are a great way to get new riders out and enjoy their bicycles and their family time together. So, you know, that's my rant of the week. I will move on, and of course, I will have more in the show. Positive side, the final Farm to Fork Fondo, or is it? Yeah, this was announced to be the final of the Renegade Sports Farm to Fork Fondo series, and that's been going on for 10 years. I started with them on day one. I was a representative for Bianchi, and I was there with my friend Elizabeth, who is also a representative for Bianchi. She gave me a phone call shortly before the event went off and said, "Ron, can you come out and help me? I know it's not in your territory," but she said, I don't know how to talk to all these people about bicycles. And she said, you're so much better at it. So why don't you come and join me? And so I did. And Fran and I both went out, and it was pouring rain. It was in the Hudson Valley. It was horribly rainy. It was just possibly one of the more unpleasant experiences that a lot of people had. But we were there with Bianchi, and the Colavita ladies cycling team was there, and it was kind of a cool thing. Great experience for Fran, although she didn't like the rain too much, and she shortened her trip a little bit because of it. But that was the very beginning, and that was 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, Tyler Wren came up with this great idea of combining his love for cycling, because he was a former professional cyclist, and he wanted to do something now to give back to the sport and then make something out of what he knew of the sport. So he combined the idea of having a farm tour, which basically would bring cyclists to the places where they get their food from. And a lot of organic farmers that were visited, ice cream stores where they're making the ice cream right on the property, you know, all great stuff. And just really, really fun. And the whole premise behind it is, without the farms, you don't get the wide open farmland. Without the wide open farmland, you don't have great places to ride your bike. This is why we love Northeastern Connecticut, because it is such a lovely place to ride your bike, because it's very rural out here. So we don't have to deal with a lot of cars, which really makes cycling so much more fun. And anyway, we have a lot of things we can talk about there, but I'm going to move on here and talk a little bit more about it, because the big announcement at the Farm for Fondo this weekend is they're not done yet. What has happened is there is going to be a change of ownership, and one of the principals of the ownership is my friend Scott, who is a... he does a lot of work with the course. He puts out a lot of signage. He runs sag wagons. He puts on his own event in upstate New York in Ballston Spa, which is a Tour de Cure. He's been working with the Tour de Cure people for a long time. He works for a lot of different people, and he's just a very good logistics guy. So I think he's going to be great at it. I really love Scott. I love working with him, and he has assured me that I will continue to work with him for the future. So I will still be available for Farm to Fork Fondos when my calendar is clear. He claims that he will have a calendar set so early that I'll have to take on all of the Farm to Fork Fondos for this year. So we'll see how that all works out. I'm not really sure, but that's what we're looking at right now. So it is not the final Farm to Fork Fondo. There are plans for 4 major events again next year. Same general concept as far as the event goes. So it will be farm tours, and in wide open farm territory and farm country. The Champlain Islands will be part of that. Yeah, you think Champlain Islands, what farms are there? Well, we start at this enormous vineyard, which is really, really cool. And then we travel around to that point. And I think there's another vineyard on the 60-mile ride also at the very top of the tour. So there's that, and then there's ice cream, and then there's an apple orchard that... apparently, from what I heard, the apple crumble that was being served at the rest stop was beyond comparison. It was very, very good. So it's also closer towards the end of the tour, so therefore you're a little more hungry and it tastes even a little bit better. But anyway, everybody seemed really, really excited by it, so it's kind of cool. So they will continue to do the Champlain Islands every year. That is that's a no-brainer. It drew in the biggest crowd ever. Over the years, there will also be a Pennsylvania Dutch ride, which has been also super popular out in Amish country. So that's going to be another one. The Hudson Valley Tour, I believe, is still on, which is out of New Paltz, New York. It is gorgeous out there. It's so beautiful. And I think the fourth one that they are going to be developing is going to be a fall tour in New Hampshire for the foliage, which will be very, very nice. So that's what's going on the Farm to Fork Fondo. And the big announcement was made at the farm dinner on Saturday night, the night before the actual event. And then, of course, we did announce it again before we let riders go on the ride. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about Farm to Fork Fondo as we... I'll just do it right now. So 950 people showed up to ride their bikes this weekend. That's a big crowd. Biggest crowd they ever had was 1,000 people. But this was 950. And shout out to my friends from Mansfield, Connecticut, who came up to ride the ride, which was kind of cool to see them. Always cool to see them. And I will see them at future events down here, too, which is really nice. It was extremely well attended. We had over 400 riders that did the metric, the 100-kilometer ride. And that's a lot of people doing 100 kilometers. So we actually had to wave start both the Grand Fondo and the Medio. We had to wave start them because we didn't want to put that many people on the road at the same time, not to mention the overwhelming run at the rest stops, because, you know, we're serving food and it gets busy, you know, it gets real busy. So we did wave start them, which was a wise idea, and I think it worked out fairly well. It was a hot day, and that would made it a little bit tougher for folks that had to go out in the second wave. They had to sit in the sun a little bit longer before the gun went off, but that's all right. Everyone seemed to have a great, great time. There was live music afterwards. There was a big banquet afterwards. It's just a great, fun event. So I highly encourage people to check into events like this because they're just so much fun. You know, the beauty of it is every single person that you meet there, that you see there, that you ride along with have the same thing in common as you. They love to ride their bikes. It's a beautiful thing. Really is. So that's part of my positive side, and I'm wasting a lot of time on my positive side today, but that's okay because it's the Tour de France. Binyam Girmay. It just keeps happening. I've talked about him every week. Why have I talked about him every week? Because he keeps winning. All right, here it goes again. He's got number three. He is now tied for the number one winner of stages in the Tour de France with Tadej Pogačar, the guy who's winning the race. That's amazing. This guy's on fire. If you have not found him yet, if you have not listened to any interviews with him yet, if you have not been watching the Tour de France yet, you really need to watch. Today could be another day. This could be number four. It's a sprint stage. We'll see what happens. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag as to what's going on, because I had to leave the tour this morning to broadcast my show today, and I'm sure they're probably sprinting for the finish right at this very moment, but that's okay. We will talk about it next week on Bicycle Talk. This is the last week of the Tour de France. This is it. It's hard to believe that it has already been 2 weeks down and 1 week to go, but it has been very exciting. There's been a lot going on, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in the show. Also on a positive side, is cycling a sustainable transport? Okay. And the truth is, the bike constitutes an economic and ecological way of getting around, becoming a fundamental, sustainable alternative for decarbonizing light transportation. There's a global consensus on the key role of bicycles in reducing carbon emissions. That was from May 7th, 2024. Yeah, things are going on. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show, too. And I saw this on the Discovery Channel this morning when I was first watching the Tour de France. And this is going to be a fun stuff. And I'll talk to you a little bit more about it because I just thought it was hysterically funny. There is a car called the Citroën 2CV. It's a very odd little French car. It has 2 horsepower. A car with 2 horsepower. I want you to think about that for a minute. You have 1/4 horsepower on your bicycle, by the way. Don't get excited, okay? But 2 horsepower car, and the Tour de France route might have been graded based on the abilities of the Citroën 2CV. We'll talk a little more about that in the show. I just thought it was fascinating, so I couldn't put it down, and I figured, you know what? I'm going to talk about this on the show because it's just too cool. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips of the Week. Okay, a simple request for your next event. When you're going to your next event, all right, could you please, 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 either if you're mechanically inclined to do so, or you have a good bike mechanic nearby, could you get your bike checked over before you show up? Yeah, I know. I know. It seems pretty simple, right? Seems like a very, very simple thing. But you have no idea how many people show up with bikes that have not been ridden since last year's event. Are you one of those? Let's hope not. So anyway, you could be. It could happen. Anyway, get your bike checked over before you show up to the event, please. The folks that are there that are doing mechanical support, they're really there to put air in your tires. They're really there to maybe check some shifting out if you're having a finicky shifting situation or something like that, or maybe as much as a cable change. But they're not there to do complete overhauls. They're not there to do complete tune-ups on your bike. Don't assume that that's going to happen. Lots of other people are there waiting for mechanical support. And if you show up with a bike that hasn't been attended to for a few years, they don't have time for you. So this is my tip, is I request that for your next event, please check over your bike. And e-bikes continue to get more attention at organized cycling events. At least 15% of the riders that were at this event, now there were 950 riders, at least 15% of them were on e-bikes. That means there were over 100 people on e-bikes at this event. It's amazing. It blows me away. I never saw it coming. I was always a little skeptical of the e-bike. Now I look at it and I see it as the great enabler to the growth of cycling. And I even listened to a really nice podcast on my way home from the National Bicycle Dealers Association. Shout out to Heather Mason, my old friend from Farm to Fork Fondo and Bianchi. And she is the president of the National Bicycle Dealers Association. She runs a great organization. They're doing all sorts of good stuff for the bike dealers, lots of information, podcasts and all. So I listened to her podcast on the way home, and there were some very interesting pieces of information in there about e-bikes and the growth of and decline of cycling in general in bicycle shops. And guess where the growth is, folks? If you haven't figured it out yet, it's with the e-bike, not the, what did they call it? The acoustic bike. I thought that was kind of funny. They call it an acoustic, your normal bike, you know, your bike that you just pedal that doesn't have a motor assist or anything. It was known as an acoustic bike. I like that. It's kind of a cool thing to say. So anyway, I'm still pedaling acoustic, but I'm always fascinated by e. So we'll see. We'll see. It could be very soon in my future. I haven't decided yet. I do have an old e-bike, which I can use for commuting purposes only, or for, you know, going to the grocery store, that sort of thing. I can pull a trailer with it and put a lot of weight in the back of it, and it's really good for that, but it doesn't have much range because it's really old, and it's not very fast because it's really old. And a shout out to my friends at SRAM for letting me have this bike many, many years ago. They gave it to me to show around. It was a prototype. And I have an old SRAM Spark e-bike. And it's kind of a fun little bike, but it's got a rack on it. It's got fenders. It's got 1.5 mountain style tires, a hub motor. It's cool. It's totally cool. But it is not an effective way to get anywhere very fast. But you know, it helps you on the hills. and it certainly has. It's not a modern day e-bike. The modern day e-bikes are so much easier to climb hills with than this thing is, but it'll get you there, and that's kind of cool. And so anyway, e-bikes are, they're on my horizon. I know that they're on a lot of people's horizons. I know people who have been rescued from the couch by buying themselves an e-bike when they thought their cycling careers or their lives of cycling was over. And now they're rebirthed with this wonderful ability to be able to go out and ride, even on a group ride, if they have the skills of which to do that sort of thing. You know, those skills probably don't go away. So it's kind of a, it's a very, you know how to respect the group and the speed and all that. If you've been on group rides over the years, you're not out there to kill everyone on your e-bike just because you have power and they don't have power. As a matter of fact, a lot of folks that I know that ride e-bikes are more support-oriented on the rides than they are aggressive on the rides, which is the right way to be. It's the right way to be anyway, is it not? Right. So, anyway, just really wanted to focus a little bit more on e-bikes, as I always do, I know, but just so you know, the percentage of e-bikes that in 2022, electric bicycles accounted for 4% of the total United States bicycle market. 4%, that's a lot. That's a lot of bikes. This was a significant increase compared to 2015, when the market share still stood at 0.06%. Electric bikes made up more than 1% of the market for the first time in 2020. So here we go. It's happening. It's growing. So 2020, 1%. 2022, 4%. You can see where this is going. And the interesting part of the show that I was listening to is they were talking about the problem with e-bikes. And the problem with e-bikes, it's never the e-bike itself, it's the battery. And the batteries are the things that cause the problems. So the batteries have, there's not a really good regulation on the batteries. There is a regulation that is followed by people that are in the National Bicycle Dealers Association. So if you're buying a bike from a bicycle shop, you're probably going to get something that is safe. But lithium iron, lithium ion batteries have a problem, and that is that they can eventually catch fire if you're not careful with them. They don't like to be banged around a lot. They don't like to be submerged. Yeah, true. It's all true. There was an actual talk on it about e-bike rental places that are near the shore who have problems with people driving their bicycles into salt water. Why? We don't know. But, you know, people do strange things. And, hey, it's a rental. Who cares, right? Bad attitude. Anyway, it was a good show. So it inspired me to look up a few things and check into the possibilities of, you know, what are out there and all. And it also pointed me in a direction, because they were talking a lot about sustainability and bicycles on the show too, which I thought was really interesting. So that's where I came up with the positive side comment, and is cycling a sustainable transport? And so I have a piece on that. And it comes from, what is this? CEPSA, which is a Planet Energy Sustainable Mobility website. So it's kind of cool. And it talks about the bicycle being the most environmentally friendly and sustainable means of transportation, which is why more and more Spaniards are using it as their preferred option for their travels. So obviously this is from Spain, and it's by Rafael Hernandez, and it talks about mountain bikes, road bikes, urban bikes, hybrid bikes, electric bikes, endless options that cover all needs. So that's become one of the most important two-wheeled means of transportation on the planet. All right, this is demonstrated by more than 1 billion bicycles that exist worldwide. So 1 billion is a lot of bicycles. According to a study, Cycling in the World, the bicycle is the most supported means of transportation by population. 82% of the global population, on average, has a favorable opinion about this means of transportation. And the truth is that the bike constitutes an economic and ecological way of getting around, becoming a fundamental sustainable alternative for decarbonizing light transportation. This is no-brainer stuff, folks. I know. I mean, it seems like I talk about this a lot, but I really believe in the bicycle. I really believe in the idea that if we could all just ride bicycles, we could really, really change the world as we know it in so many different ways. You know, exercise, the benefit of exercise, the benefit of just movement and getting out, and mental health as well as physical health. And I think mental health is really the key factor here. I don't think it's really the physical health is a bonus that you get when you ride the bike. The mental health is unexpected, and it is probably one of the key and most important parts. Happy people don't do mass shootings, okay? Happy people do not cause problems. Happy people do not do negative things. It just generally works that way. And when I talk to people, and I've talked to people all weekend long because that's my job at the Farm to Fork Fondo, is I am the MC, and I am the guy that just kind of, you know, cheers people on and greets them when they come back. As I talk to people, they all tell me the same thing, that when they get on their bike, they're just happy. They're happier when they're riding their bike than anything else they do in their lives. And so this is critical. Climate change, a bonus. Physical fitness, a bonus. Mental health, a necessity. It really is. And this is something that will give you that mental health that you're looking for. Talk to a young girl at the finish line, very, very enthusiastic young lady. And she's, you know, in the process of trying to make a decision as to whether to move to another state to be with a boyfriend who is there. And, you know, she's I don't really have a job. And I said, but are you happy? Because she seems really happy. And she said, yes, I am. And I said, that's great. I said, take care of yourself first. Be happy. Maybe you should ride a bike. And then I told her the Pedal and Ron story about how when I was her age, she was 20 years old, and when I was her age, I packed up my bicycle and I rode my bicycle across the country, and it literally changed my life. And it continues to change my life, because as I have gotten older, I have developed into different levels of cycling. I've been through all the different levels of the industry, and now I'm really, really more focused on getting people who are new to cycling into cycling, and also really focused on trying to figure out more ways to have more sustainable trails and transportation networks that are out there. It just kind of goes with you. You know, it's a thing that you get very passionate about. So, you know, and passion really is the key to life. If you have passion, then you have life, and that's a good thing. My bike makes me very passionate, and talking about my bike makes me very passionate. Talking to you about bikes makes me very passionate, and that's a good thing. Plus, then there's just going out and riding your bike, because you know what it's like? It's like when you were a kid and you went out and you rode your bike. And that's a number one thing that I got, number one comment of all the comments I got with people as I interviewed them today, or not today, this past weekend, was that then when they got on their bicycle, they felt like a kid again. And doesn't everybody just want to feel like a kid again? I mean, that's a good thing, right? I think it is. I think it is. It makes you feel younger. It makes you feel stronger. It makes you more independent. It gives you all the positive aspects of a happy life. And of course, the happiest people in the world, and I told many, many people this, they're in the Nordic countries, and they are 70% bicycle transportation oriented countries. So if you take a country that 70% of the people use bicycles as a transportation method versus motorized vehicles, and then you do a survey and find out that they're not only are they doing that, but they're also the happiest people in the world. Is this a no-brainer? Is this not rocket science? This is simple, simple, simple stuff. The bike is the key to all pleasure in life. So anyway, I know. I'm back at it again. You know, I get very enthusiastic about the bicycle and everything that it can do for you. But it's there's just a never-ending amount of information that keeps coming across my desk that keeps telling me about all these benefits of cycling. And it's like, I already know this, but that's okay. My job isn't to already know this. My job is to tell everybody else, because that's what I'm doing now. That's why I consider myself the ambassador of cycling, and I always will be. In Spain, the state bicycle strategy developed by the Ministry of Transport, Mobility, and Urban Agenda to promote its use is also being implemented. And over the next 10 years, they anticipate a creation of 1,000 more kilometers of bike lanes, 4,100 parking spaces, as well as strengthening the bicycle public sharing systems around 30 cities. The transformation of new mobility involves promoting the use of sustainable transportation, and this is where the bicycle will play a very, very important role. So there we go. There we go. I mean, the European countries, as far as I'm concerned, are so far ahead of the game, because they have interesting infrastructure issues that they have dealt with better than we have here in the United States. When we want to transport more people, we make the highways wider and faster, which is like shooting yourself in the foot. It just doesn't, it's not going to feel good, okay? You make the roads faster, you make the roads wider, and what happens is speed increases. And if you take a look at the National Traffic Safety Organization, they will tell you that the speed is it's not the amount of cars on the road that's killing people, it's the speed at which they travel. And the highway deaths are way higher again this year than they have been in past years. I will definitely point a finger towards COVID, because I think COVID is, I think it was a catalyst to what happened. When we first got out and riding our bikes, when COVID was going on, we were the only people out there on the roads because everybody was home. And the motorists were like extremely, extremely kind to us as cyclists. And then as people started emerging from their little caves, because everybody was kind of caved in, the aggressive driving behavior just went completely out of control. I think that has a lot to do with people feeling that they were controlled. And because they felt they were controlled, they wanted to get their independence or their yayas out by getting in their car and driving at excessive speeds. That's a theory. It's just a guess. But I think that if someone looked into it deeply enough, I think they would actually see that. I know that aggressive driving behavior got way, way, way worse after COVID. So anyway, that's... We'll move on that one and find the next thing here on our list. Okay, so trail conflicts and user speed. This comes from a trail site, and it just talks about the fact that, you know, you really, if you're using a trail, your maximum speed should really not be more than 10 to 15 miles an hour. If you are going 15 miles an hour on a trail and you encounter someone who is walking on the trail or even possibly riding their bicycle at a much slower speed, you need to reduce your speed to their speed, not your speed, not increase them to your speed. You want to reduce yourself down to their speed, because those trails really weren't made for the speed demons, not at all. There was even a group out here that called themselves the Speed Demons. True, they called themselves the Airline Trail Speed Demons or the Hop River Trail Speed Demons or whatever. I can't remember what it was, but no, wrong idea. Get on the road. If you want to go fast, get on the road. And if you don't think the road is safe enough for you, then do something about it. Learn how to ride your bike respectably. Learn how to ride with traffic. Learn how to teach the motorists, by the way of your behavior, that you belong there. And get your fast butt out on the road. I could have said something that rhymed with that, but I didn't do it. So, yeah, stay off the trails. If you're going to go fast, stay off the trails. If you're going to go fast and you can't stay off the trails, then at least slow down to whatever speed the person you are passing is going. And if that's inconvenient to you, I'm terribly sorry that you're so selfish, but sorry. You know what? You really don't have to do a time trial on a bike trail. It doesn't make any sense. There's other places to do things like that. So anyway, I'm gonna go on from that, because I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on that, because there's too many other fun things going on in the world of cycling, including this Citroën 2CV story, which I love the story. It's just great. The 2CV, if you're familiar at all with Citroën 2CV cars, they are the most bizarre looking little French cars that you've ever seen. And definitely look them up if you've never seen one before, because they are unique, okay? They are kind of a spectacle in France. You see them around, and people use them for advertisement. And some people, there are Citroën 2CV clubs, and they all have their cars out. And today at the Tour de France, there was a whole group of them that were out with their hoods up and doing like the little car show thing on the side of the road. But it is the most interesting looking vehicle you've ever seen, and it has a 2 horsepower output. Now, the last time I got into a motorized vehicle with 2 horsepower, it might have been a lawn tractor, or maybe that had 5 horsepower. I don't know, but we're not talking about a very powerful vehicle. So they pioneered a front engine, front wheel drive layout with its Traction Avant, but the expensive car did little to bring transportation to the masses. By World War II, a surprising number of French farmers still used horses and carts. So after the war, Citroën finally rolled out its budget-friendly, capable 2CV. The car's full name was Deux Chevaux, which is French for 2 horses. The vehicle had two taxable horsepower, but don't let the name fool you. The horsepower was actually rated at a mighty 9 horsepowers, and the author of this article says, "I've ridden in a 2CV, and I am here to tell you, shifting isn't optional." Yeah, you have to shift a lot with this car. So the 2CV featured long travel suspension, because very little of the France's roads were paved yet. So it also had a windshield to rear bumper canvas sunroof. Once you folded it up, you could basically use the thing like a tiny truck. The roof also gave it the adorable nickname Umbrella on Wheels. Okay, so now we go on to what how this thing is, well, there's more. So it was engineered. It was relatively advanced. Its bodywork and glass were all flat. It was easy to make a repair. You can think of it as the VW Beetle of France. And it was the world's first front-wheel drive car to sell more than 1 million units because it proved so popular to the world. And as you can imagine, a 9-horsepower first-generation 2CV would struggle with some of the hills. The Tour de France bicyclists navigate the Alps and Pyrenees and mountains. On many of these hills, you need to downshift severely. And interestingly, they are categorized as one as being the steepest hill. It's easy to imagine the Tour's 1947 route planners with a little 2CV grading each hill based on how many gears they had to drop. And this is why this has been such a persistent myth. So yeah, is it a myth? Is it urban legend? Or is it really how it was decided? So the way this works is a Category 3 climb means that you could get over the hill in third gear. A Category 2 climb means that you had to reduce down to second gear to get over the climb. And a Category 1 climb means that you had to put it all the way down into first gear to get up and over the climb. I like the folklore. I like it a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense because I could never really figure out the differences between a Cat 1, Cat 2, and Cat 3 climb. They all looked ugly to me. You know, some are like really short and steep, and yet they don't get the same category as one that was really, really long and goes on forever. And that might be a more higher degree, like Category 1 climb, just because of its length. So there's other factors involved here, but the fact that the Citroën has this little mythical thing that goes along with it, how can you leave that alone? That's just too much fun. So I thought it was cool. They did a little piece on the Tour de France show today on it, and if you haven't had a chance to look at that yet, definitely go back and look at it, because it'll talk a little bit about this. But so the 2CV would also go sometimes so slow that it would be quicker to get out and pedal. So it is not a powerful vehicle, but it's, you know, it lasted for a really, really, really long time. And I remember the first VWs that came into the United States, because I do come from way back then. And they were, I don't know, 38 horsepower. I think that was what the lowest, I can't even remember. I would have to look that up. You can fact check me on that one. But they didn't have a whole lot of horsepower, that's for sure. They had a really, 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 really low first gear. I do remember that. So you could line up next to a very high horsepowered car next to your little VW, and you could run it through the first gear and be well ahead of the car next to you because it was geared so low. So going back to gearing, which goes back to cycling, which all makes sense. And well, anyway, we'll just pass on that. That was just a lot of fun. I wanted to play around that a little bit. I know it's about cars, not about bicycles, but because of the car, it relates to the bicycle because of what the grading on the climbs are on the Tour de France. Let's go on to the Tour de France. There's so much more going on right now. Oh my God, have you been watching? The last time I talked to you about the Tour, Bimian Gamay had won 2 stages of the Tour de France. He's a sprinter. He is from Africa. He was the first African to win a tour stage. And then he was the first African to win 2 tour stages. And then he was the first African to wear the green jersey. He is still today wearing that green jersey. The man is making history. He's 24 years old. He is lovely in interview, absolutely lovely in interview. We have other riders that have had spectacular tours. Mark Cavendish came back and won his final. I'm going to say it's his final because I don't think he's going to win today, but we'll see. You never know. It's a sprinter stage. It's his last chance. When Mark was this gentleman's age and winning sprints, he was not pleasant. He was just not, he wasn't a good interview. He was kind of all full of himself and kind of had, how do I say this nicely? I can't say it nicely. He had sprinter's mentality, and they tend to be a little all about me. And you know, they were my least favorite of people to race with when I was racing my bike. I tried to stay as far away from the sprinters as I could, even tried to distance myself from them before a finish line so I didn't have to deal with them. But, you know, it's they're not my cup of tea. They tend to be riders that take advantage of other riders, and you know, I understand that's their skill. That's what they do. They've got amazing, amazing horsepower. Well, they don't have horsepower. They have amazing, amazing wattage. We all have the same horsepower. They have more wattage, so that they can just really rev it up and do their damage at the end of a race, which is really exciting and fun to watch. And it's great for the spectators, but if you're in the peloton, they're kind of a pain in the butt. they're kind of there, and they're kind of doing their thing, and I understand them doing their thing, but you know, they will do the least amount of work as they can until they get to the finish line, which is great. Good for them. That's fine. But anyway, that's the sprinters versus the road guys, the roadies like me who are more into doing the climbs. By the way, gotta tell you, when I was up in Vermont this past weekend, I got to stay at one of Tyler's uncommon accommodations. So my friend Tyler, who founded the Farm to Fork Fondo, has this other business called Uncommon Accommodations, and it's an Airbnb thing where he basically rents out tiny houses and yurts as your uncommon accommodation. And he has four of these on his property on the backside of Smuggler's Notch. He's a half mile down the street from Smuggler's Notch ski area. If anyone is into downhill skiing, you'll know that Smuggler's is one of the premium places to go skiing in New England in the wintertime. It tends to face north, holds more snow. It's a very, very cool spot. It's also where Mount Mansfield is. It is also where the Von Trapp Family Lodge is, which is a huge cross-country skiing resort. If you don't know who the Von Trapp family is, watch The Sound of Music. That's who they are. And anyway, it's a really wonderful winter wonderland there. And then, of course, on the other side of that is Stowe. And Stowe and Stowe Village is another gigantic ski area and big outdoor adventure area. So his property really kind of locks in right next to their property, which makes it a fun thing. So I stayed in a tiny house. I stayed in something called the Fox Den. It's kind of fun. But the beauty of this, and where I'm going with this, is as I'm looking at this road, I'm going, I know where I am. I'm on the backside of Smuggler's Notch. I used to race my bicycle up there. And we would go up out of Stowe Village on a very, very long climb with a 16% average grade, okay? And we would climb up to the top of Smugglers and then down the other side. And that would immediately define the race as you know it. The little guys like me would work their hardest there, and we would try our best to get away from those other guys that I was just telling about, you know, the sprinter people. Anyway, we would do our best to try to get away from them. And if we were successful and got over the top and could organize a group and put it together, we could probably have a good chance of staying away till the end of the race. And I successfully did that a couple of times. So it's kind of cool because, you know, you get over the top, you look around, you start assessing who's with you and what's going on. And you just start asking questions. Anybody do this before? Anybody do that? I remember the best time I ever had there, I saw one other person I knew because you know, when you're a really good climber in your area, you're really the big fish in the small pond. But then when you get to a big event like this and you look around and there's 12 or 10 or 8 of you that are all of the same ability, that could drop anyone, anywhere, anytime on a hill, then it becomes a little more interesting, because now you all know you have the skill to get over the top of that mountain, and you know, all know that you made it to the top of that mountain, but you also all know that pushing a big gear is just not in your wheelhouse. So you have to do something about that, and you have to learn to work together. So I put together this great 10-man break once. There was one person in the break that I knew, and it was Lars Eden. I believe that was who it was, out of New Haven, Connecticut. And I looked over and I said, "Hey, Lars, you ever do a double pace line?" And he said, "Once." And I said, "Okay, that's what we're doing. Lars, get up here." And then we got him up in the front. And I said, "Okay, we're going to talk this out. We're going to explain as we go through." I ran one line, he ran the other line, and we had this machine going down the road. And it was unbelievable. We got clocked at 56 miles an hour by a police radar. It was cool. It was really cool. But the coolest thing about Smuggler's Notch and climbing up over out of Stowe and into the mountain is when you get to the top, it's like you're on another planet. There's huge boulders on the side of the road. There's just tight twists and turns. They won't allow a tractor trailer truck to get through because they'll get stuck. They can't get through. The turns are too tight and the grades are too steep. So it's a fascinating place, and it brought back a lot of memories. So that was kind of fun. That's how I ended my trip yesterday, was coming back through there and going down memory lane, which was really, really cool. So anyway, that was a lot of fun, and brought back some great bike racing memories. There were some classic road races in New England. That was one of them. Another one was known as the Tour of the Valleys. And the Tour of the Valleys was, it started and finished in Putney, Vermont, which is just north of Brattleboro. And it had three major climbs on it. Two biggies in the middle that were of 3+ mile type distances, and then it finished by turning off of the main road and up, going up to an apple orchard, which is about a 1 mile climb. And if you could be anywhere in the mix by the time you made that final turn at the 1 mile climb and still had some legs about you, you could do really well on that race, because it really came down to the 1 mile to the finish in the apple orchard. And it was a blast. It was just a blast. Those were great. There was another one that was around Lake Sunapee in New Hampshire, which was a great race also. Beautiful if you had time to look. But again, I've driven it and therefore been able to see exactly what it was when I was racing over. But when I was racing my bike, I never even looked to the side to see the beautiful views that are around Sunapee Lake in New Hampshire. But another one of those great classic races. I did an upstate New York race at Hunter Mountain, which is another ski resort, and just epic big long road races, which really just don't exist much anymore. The Killington Stage Race is still around here in New England, and I believe that they still have some big road race days during the Killington Stage Race. But again, it's really, really hard to find a good road race anymore. It's just logistically difficult here in the United States because we have too many restrictions. We have insurance issues. We have cost of police escort issues. That's really, really expensive. And marshalling issues, which is generally the municipalities want their police departments involved with that. There's a big price tag to it. So if there's anyone out there that has the fascination for bicycle road racing like I do and has billions of dollars to spend on it, please step forward. I could show you some great places to have a bike race. And we do have some classic places that rival some of these European climbs that you're seeing in the Tour de France right now. So anyway, that's my shout out to anyone who's looking to donate some money into a really, really fun sport and not really want to get much more back from it than the excitement that it creates. So anyway, I'm going to move on because we are running out of time and this is going to be it. I'm not going to get into some other things that I put down here because I've completely run out of time. And maybe next week I can talk a little bit more about different things that are out there. The SUV always runs across my desk as being possibly the most dangerous vehicle I've ever seen and or driven in my life. And there's even a Wikipedia page for SUV haters out there. Yep, for real. There is. Funny, huh? Anyway, let's move on. Binium Gamay, I hope you pull it off today. I'd just love to see you get four of them. Boy, if you could get four, that would just be crazy good. Tadej Pogačar is killing it this year. He looks like he's probably going to end up with both the Giro and the Tour de France, unless Vingegaard pulls a rabbit out of his hat, and that's going to be one heck of a rabbit. I got to tell you, it's got to have to be a big hat. So we'll see what happens. Okay. Now, events. The 2024 Quiet Corner Bike Tour is coming up really close. Now we're at Sunday, July 28th, 2024. It's from the Thread City Cyclers. These guys right here. I'm pointing to the wrong side of my chest here. Thread City Cyclers, my local club. And these rides all start and finish at Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. There's a 102, a 64, a 40 and a 20-mile road ride available in an 18-mile gravel loop. It's on Bike Reg. Please sign up. We sign up early if you can. It really, really helps us with our logistics and getting things done. And we would love to see you there. Come ride with us. It'll be fun. Domestique events coming up this fall. We've got Lime Rock Epic on Saturday, August 17th, the 2024 Steeplechase Bike Tour. And ride and walk is what we have it listed as now, because there is a 5-mile walk involved there too, but there's a 20-mile ride, a 35-mile and a 62-mile road ride, and also an 18-mile gravel road ride. And I'm getting a lot of inquiries about the additional 40-mile gravel route, which is available, which is going to be 90% dirt roads and trails and very, very, very few cars. So very cool stuff. So come check us out on August 17th. Once again, it is on Bike Reg. Project Mayhem Cyclocross continues. We'll stay tuned on that. We've got 8 promoters involved in the series right now. It is going to be a big deal this year, a real big deal. We're working directly with the Massachusetts promoters to try to make sure no one steps on anyone else's toes and to build cyclocross back up, even more so in New England, which is really cool. So it's 2024. What's your promise to yourself? More miles, ride, commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply just enjoying the rides you take by simply slowing down and smelling the roses? I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and get out on your bike. Take one day out of your week and park your car or truck and ride your bike instead. You're going to surprise yourself. I know you will. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. You can listen to our past episodes on whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify, and you can also listen on the Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!